This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Civil rights attorney Julius Chambers died in Charlotte last week at the age of 76. He fought tirelessly against racial inequality. He won an important case in the Supreme Court in 1971 that led to the desegregation of Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. Not everyone appreciated his efforts. His house was firebombed and his office set ablaze, but he never stopped fighting for civil rights. He argued 8 cases before the U.S. Supreme Court and won them all. His impact on the legal profession and on the lives of those who knew him is hard to calculate. He was honored at a conference in Chapel Hill in 2010, and we will let the words of himself and his colleagues speak for themselves.
I have very nice offices right now at Harvard Law School. I have a very nice job at Harvard Law School. But in many ways, I would be false to myself if I didn't say that some of the best work that I've ever done was in that law firm during that summer, in that library, trying to find every employment discrimination case that had ever been decided, because that's when I knew that I wanted to be a civil rights lawyer for sure. So thank you, Julius.
Thank you very much, Elaine.
You know, I think if he'd been more sort of the public persona that some other people are, he probably would have been a Supreme Court justice or a politician, because he certainly has the following and the political and intellectual clout that is really unsurpassed by a lot of people, especially African Americans in this country.
Well, I am not advocating pass and all, but I am telling you that I am happy with what I've been able to do, and I appreciate the work that you all have done and what you've done in supporting the work we've been about. And I encourage you to continue with those efforts and to make sure that the goal that Justice Marshall set for us years ago is continued as a goal for all of us.
That was Julius Chambers himself in 2010, preceded by attorney Luke Largis, and first we heard Lonnie Guinier. Joining us now to talk about the legacy of Julius Chambers is Gene Nickel, director of the UNC Center on Poverty, Work, and Opportunity. Gene, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here.
How did you know Julius Chambers?
Well, all lawyers know of Julius Chambers, and then it was my good fortune when I came to Carolina, whatever that is, 15 years ago or something, became dean of the law school, to reach out to Chancellor Chambers. Then he was the chancellor at Central. I spent many, many months trying to talk him into coming to Carolina to start a civil rights center during his last months at Central, and he eventually agreed to do that. He let me come visit him once a month for maybe 7 months, and he was extraordinarily noncommittal, and he kept saying, "You sure you want to do that?" Then the happiest day of my deanship, I must say, is when he agreed that he would take that position with us.
Talk about his legal career. He's somebody, and we'll talk about the legal battles he fought and won, but he had to become a lawyer before anybody blazed that path. What was it like for him to be a lawyer in the South?
Well, I think that started even before he became a lawyer. It started in the educational challenges that he faced, discrimination that he faced even before coming to Carolina, and then he was one of the very first Black students at UNC Chapel Hill, having gone to Central for undergraduate. So he dealt with a wide array of pressures at Chapel Hill. He amassed the greatest set of accomplishments I've ever heard of any law student, graduating number one in his class and editor-in-chief of the Law Review. I think that, you know, there are a lot of ways of looking at Julius's legacy, but one thing that North Carolina lawyers would say, I think if they're honest to the person, is last Friday we lost North Carolina's most accomplished lawyer, and the person who has been North Carolina's most accomplished lawyer for the last 50 years. So that is saying a great deal. He is, I was dean of the law school for a long time. He's the most accomplished lawyer to have graduated from the UNC Law School, it's certainly as a lawyer. Now, we have some great figures, Frank Porter Graham, Bill Friday, Terry Sanford. But I think, no lawyer of the accomplishment of Julius Chambers.
Among his accomplishments, of course, that big case that desegregated the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. Tell us about that case.
Well, that's you refer, of course, to Swan against Charlotte-Mecklenburg, which, of course, begins as the massive and controversial effort to make Brown real in Charlotte. I think Julius and his law firm had been engaged in a wide array of desegregation cases prior to that time, even though he was a very young lawyer. Fergie was a young lawyer. Adam Stein was a young lawyer.
Naming,
his partners,
yeah.
That's right. In what is was the first integrated law firm in North Carolina. But Swan goes all the way to the United States Supreme Court. It is a landmark ruling, the strongest opinion ever issued by the United States Supreme Court on the enforcement side of Brown against Board of Education. A powerful legacy for the whole country. But, of course, even though we talk about Swan the most, it's hardly Chambers' only major victory. I teach constitutional law, and a lot of the hallmarks that you teach, even still, came from Chancellor Chambers and his litigation. So a remarkable, I think an unparalleled legacy of the fight for equality through the use of the judicial system. One hopes we will see it again, but we might not.
Well, that, I think, is what is remarkable about it. And certainly Dr. King spoke of this, but Julius Chambers was the one who enacted it because of his legal genius, was successful. 8 cases before the Supreme Court won them all. The idea that our legal system really does operate in defense of civil rights, in defense of equality, and all of the institutions that have been built are in spite of it. And so if I can go to the court and I can make the case, I can prove to you that this America really is a just and an open society.
Right. And that's a wonderful promise. And the career of Chambers is demonstrative of it. But it's also important to remember it's not just that he was so brilliant that he came up with legal arguments that outfoxed his opponents or persuaded the courts. It also required, his career required remarkable courage, the kind of courage that I hope that civil rights freedom fighters no longer have to have in the United States. You know, you worry that your home will be bombed, your office burned, your car bombed when you're in giving a speech. And it was lovely to hear his voice in the tapes leading into this session. I am sure after his car was bombed in New Bern, he walked back to the microphone, was just as calm, just as quiet, just as resolute in his commitment to the great battles of equality, a commitment really to making the promise of America real. He surely has done more in that fight than any North Carolinian in history. And he did it without... some of us are loud and talk too much. That's not Julius Chambers. I used to do a lot of programs with him, and I was astonished because when you know he's a great lawyer, you don't think of a great lawyer as being quiet.
Right. Or not being ambitious in the way that we heard in that tape clip where, you know, he could have been a Supreme Court justice and certainly a successful politician. Why do you think he didn't go that route?
I think he was too committed to the mission of equality to do that. Julius Chambers, without doubt, I mean, you risk death and dismemberment in the cause of justice. You're not very apt to say, okay, well, I'm going to trim my sails in order to look like a good chancellor candidate, or I'm going to work real hard in this political process so that Lyndon Johnson thinks so well of me and wants to put me on the United States Supreme Court, or Jimmy Carter does. I don't think there's a greater living and now past example of being committed, sort of existentially committed to the work of justice, doing it day in and day out, and doing it in a way that is modest. I said he's the most accomplished lawyer, surely, to ever graduate from the UNC Law School. If you spend time with him, it was my great luck to be sort of next door to him in the offices over there. You would never know that he's the most accomplished lawyer that we'd have. I have stories which, you know, when we started the Civil Rights Center, Julius and I went to New York to try and raise money from the big foundations. And so we were going to go up and talk, I think it was to Ford. What you usually do, you know, you get a program director who's going to meet with you. I got a call the day before we were going up from the president of the Ford Foundation saying, do you mind if the meeting is with me instead of the program director? I said, no, that will be fine. And then we get there, and they wanted the meeting to be with the entire staff because they wanted to meet Julius Chambers. Nobody wanted to meet me, by the way. And then right before we started, the program director who was to make the decision was a great woman named Sarah Rios. She says, would you mind, Mr. Chambers, if I came over and just touched your sleeve before we thought? I said, well, I think we're probably in pretty good shape here.
You got the grant.
We got the grant.
Gene Nickel, thank you so much. We're going to do an hour and spend more time next week talking about the legacy. And what we didn't get to was what is undone and what has been undone since all of that. We will talk in more detail. But Gene Nickel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to see you, Frank. Thanks.
Gene Nickel, director of UNC's Center on Poverty, Work, and Opportunity. The funeral for Julius Chambers is scheduled for tomorrow. On the State of Things Today, just ahead, a film on the African-American community tackling the issue of gay rights. The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.